Welcome back to Leads to Scale, a podcast for marketers about building businesses and scaling ideas. I am your host, Toby Daniels. On this week's episode, we have James Lemon, who is the head of content at BuzzFeed UK. I sat down with James during our most recent Social Media Week London conference, where he led a main stage session on why your brand needs to start thinking like a media company. Following his talk and during our conversation on the podcast, we discussed how BuzzFeed thinks about its responsibility online and the checks and balances that they have in place to continue delivering truthful and joyful content to their audiences, how the creative process has changed at BuzzFeed and how he has adapted, and the metrics that BuzzFeed cares about the most. Thanks again for listening, and as always, please rate and review our podcast on iTunes and send us feedback to leads2scale@socialmediaweek.org. Okay, let's get on with the show. Welcome back to Leads to Scale. This week, I'm very excited to be joined by James Lemon. James, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Right. So, James, you head up BuzzFeed's content team here in London, producing branded content and editorial lists, quizzes, social assets, and videos for BuzzFeed's channels, including Tasty, Bring Me, and Nifty. Formerly, you were the creative director at BuzzFeed. Prior to BuzzFeed, I believe you were a viral content writer who held the Wikipedia credit for defining the Dodge meme. And also, you were a researcher for the New Yorker magazine. An illustrious career. Super interested to get into it. So thanks for joining again. For the benefit of our listeners, I think what's always helpful is to sort of go back and sort of understand a little bit about the kind of the arc of your career, the trajectory you've been on, and ultimately how you found yourself in your current role with BuzzFeed. So walk us through it.
Sure. So where to begin? I think the story for me actually goes way back to when I was in school. I wrote a thesis on a philosophical concept called solipsism. Bear with me, this gets interesting. It's the concept of loneliness, of being alone and being unable to really meaningfully connect with other people. Like, we're all trapped by our own brains. It's hard to really know someone else. And so I did that. I left school and I was working as a writer, freelance writer, and I was starting to produce more and more viral content articles. This was a very in vogue thing at the time, and more websites, BuzzFeed being one, were starting to make real impact on social with their viral content writing. So I started doing that. And that is when I did write an article about the Doge meme that Wikipedia cited as the first definition of Doge. They've since revised it to someone else, I think. But that was a cool factoid at the time. And yes, I was doing research for the New Yorker magazine, and this was sort of how I was some of my biggest gigs as I was paying the bills as a freelance writer. And then I read a magazine article about BuzzFeed, and specifically it was an article about the branded content side of BuzzFeed, how they were taking these viral content insights and sort of selling them to brands and saying, we can write something from your brand that we think will go viral based on what we've learned. And the company's whole philosophy around this was tapping into what really connects people, and what makes them feel seen and less alone. And I thought back to my thesis that I'd written, and I thought, this is so cool. I mean, as a writer, I had never conceived of a career track for me that would be so data adjacent or data informed. And that really sort of lit up my mind with a lot of different ideas. And so I sort of became obsessive about wanting to work at BuzzFeed on this branded content team. Of course, I'd never studied advertising. I was a liberal arts major. And I was a sort of viral content writer, so that was good. But how could I get the job? So I managed to get my foot in the door. The BuzzFeed has a community program, which they still run today. Anyone can make an account on BuzzFeed Community, contribute quizzes, contribute lists, and a real live full-time staff at BuzzFeed will review your work. And if it's really good, they'll promote it on the website, and you can go viral and be the number one read article on the site just like anybody else. So I found out about this and sort of devoted myself to going viral on BuzzFeed. And it took me basically a summer to do it. I wrote, I don't know, a few dozen articles. And eventually I was, for a time, the top community contributor on BuzzFeed. And so at that time I applied, got the job. And I was just an intern, actually, on the advertising team. And because I had no advertising experience. And so they, at the time, though, BuzzFeed was cycling people through what we called a fellowship. So you would sort of learn the ropes and then they would make you full time. And so I did that and started in New York.
Amazing. So I have to correct myself, and I'm kicking myself a little bit because I was so focused on making sure I got your surname right in terms of pronouncing it correctly that I obviously mispronounced Doge. And when you read it, I think sometimes just like you forget about or you disconnect from the actual thing. So yes, Doge meme. I want to go back though. So I'm just super interested in this sort of this idea of how, you know, content can be used to bring us closer together, to connect us, to help us find like common meaning, which ultimately just makes us feel less isolated and less lonely. And the reason I want to go back to it is because I think we are at a really interesting kind of like inflection point right now when we sort of think about the role of social media in our lives. And I think, you know, if we're honest and fairly objective about it, we are simultaneously facing a situation where people do feel more isolated, but we're also facing a situation where it continues to play a really important and powerful role in bringing us closer together. It will probably always be simultaneously like both of those two things, but what are you seeing from your side? Like, what are some of the anecdotes or things that you can share in terms of how you're seeing social media bring people together, particularly around the kind of type of content that you guys are putting out?
Sure. So yes, I think that social media, this sort of utopian notion that it would connect us all and we would all be happy, has really, the balloon's deflated in the past few years. And in fact, some of these same sort of features of social media have been weaponized for poor ends. And we're now all sort of dealing with the ramifications of that and wondering, well, you know, where do we go next? But at BuzzFeed, we're still committed to bringing positivity to the internet, which we define as truth and joy, whether it's truth through our news reporting or joy through the more fun content that made us famous in the first place. And that part of the internet is still alive and well. I think it doesn't get the headlines like it used to. You know, the notion of a cat GIF being something clever to send to someone has gone, and we've all become accustomed to this, and instead we're all just doing it constantly without thinking much about it. And it's not getting media press anymore. Instead, the bad stuff's getting media press. But as far as building communities on BuzzFeed, I think that part's still alive and well. I mean, we're seeing that as many of our pages that have grown to brands in their own right, such as Tasty and Bring Me, have many, many, many tens of millions of followers. And in the community tabs on Facebook, for instance, or on YouTube, we're able to engage with the audience and have feedback sessions. But what's really kind of amazing is that you see people starting to use these places like forums, where they will post and say, hey, Bring Me community, I'm looking to go to Berlin next year. Does anyone have any recommendations for me? And then suddenly all of these people who live in Berlin will start recommending things, and you have this whole conversation evolve naturally between people. And that's not something that we as a media company have caused to happen. It's something we've engendered by simply publishing travel content, opening up the forum, and letting people have the conversations they want to have. And I think that's very pure. And that's happening in a lot of different ways. And it's a good thing, right? That is the dream, delivering on the original dream of connecting people and having them help each other out.
I think it's important. I think two things that are important for people to understand, whether you're in the sort of the echo chamber of the industry, or whether you're just, you know, out there as a sort of a consumer of this content. You know, one, don't believe everything you read in the press, or at least understand that the press and the media generally will write negative headlines about like social media's sort of role and impact in our lives, because, you know, it's good for business. And they're doing a tremendous job of that at the moment. And it's not to sort of try and shy away from or ignore the challenges and the problems that we have to acknowledge and recognize as an industry. It's just that it's not all bad. It's not all negative. And look, the media will never really sort of, you know, change necessarily for lots of obvious reasons. But it's important to kind of understand that in context. And then the second thing to understand in context is that as an industry, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this from the sort of BuzzFeed's perspective, we have to acknowledge the fact that we have an unprecedented level of influence, particularly in regards to the fact that we can reach tens of millions, potentially hundreds of millions of people through social media. And with that influence, and with this new ability to reach people at a scale that we've never been able to before, comes a responsibility. And this is kind of like very much central to our theme here at Social Media Week this week: stories with great influence comes great responsibility. And I'd love to kind of like, you know, sort of understand a little bit more about kind of how BuzzFeed thinks about that. right? How BuzzFeed thinks about its responsibility, and how what are some of the internal checks you have, like creatively and editorially, to ensure that you live up to and hold yourself accountable to the truth and joy kind of mantra, as well as obviously continuing to impact people as positively as possible.
Yeah, definitely. So, everything that we create and put out, whether it's a post or a video, goes through multiple checks. And this is speaking, very functionally, very tactically about what we do. But you have someone who has an idea, that idea is vetted, they produce the idea, and then someone who's a line manager looks over it and may loop in others if there's questions about the implications of this. We discuss it, we come to a consensus, and we approve or disapprove of it. And then it goes through standard legal checks to make sure there's nothing else that's problematic. And then QC, and then it goes out. So that's a lot of rounds of checks. And for most things, it's not a problem because we don't have to, engage all of these resources and really have a big think about it, because as a brand, our tone of voice is to be very positive. And it's true that negativity spreads and that can be very viral, and that you can game the engagement metrics on social media by being negative, being combative, being divisive. And it's all sort of it's engagement bait, basically. And we as a company try and stay away from that. And there's others that have built a brand on doing that. And maybe in a world that's rich and, diverse voices are welcome, it's not a bad thing that others are trying to do that. But I think ultimately what we've found is that positivity wins the day, actually, that the positive content that allows people to connect in a good way will actually ultimately outperform the bad content. And so that is something we found out very early in our company's history. And that is why we are known as a brand that is sort of positive and joyful.
We interrupt this week's episode of Leads to Scale to share an exciting update regarding our forthcoming conference in New York City. The 12th edition of Social Media Week New York, the city's premier event for leaders in digital marketing, is taking place at the Sheraton New York Times Hotel on May 5th. Through to the 7th. This year's event will kick off our 2020 global theme, Human X, a conversation that will explore why the future of marketing will be human first and experience driven. Check out our first wave of speakers, including leaders from H&M, Reddit, RGA, American Express, Heineken, Google, Salesforce, and GE, and secure your pass by visiting socialmediaweek.org/New York and use the code LEADS2SCALE at checkout to save an additional 10% off your pass. Okay, let's get back to the show. We coined this phrase empathy economics, which sort of speaks to this idea that actually being empathetic, which is really about sort of putting yourselves in the shoes of your audience and like really demonstrating an understanding in regards to what they are feeling emotionally, can actually be really good for business. And I think BuzzFeed exemplifies this in so many ways. Obviously, BuzzFeed's built a very big business, but also at the same time, sticking to those guns and really sort of investing in this idea that positivity will win the day and will ultimately be good for the bottom line, I just think is like an important example to talk about and share. Let's talk about like creativity in the creative process, and in particular like how that has evolved for you in your role over the last like few years, because and I want to actually go back to something you were saying, because I always find this quite interesting when people who are not sort of don't consider themselves to be sort of qualified marketers but are in a sort of like a creative or editorial role that is connected to marketing in some function. Those people oftentimes always make the best people, the most creatively interesting, probably produce the best work, because they understand the craft, they understand storytelling, and they understand how to kind of reach and impact an audience. And those are some of the fundamentals of marketing, but just because you don't have some fancy marketing title doesn't mean that you can't bring a great deal of value to what you do. But tell me about the creative process, because I imagine it's changed and evolved over time. So help me understand what your process is, but also when you think about adapting it to this constantly changing environment, what are some of the things that you are sort of focused on right now?
Sure. So two parts to this answer. The first part is the creative process at BuzzFeed is a test and learn process. That's what we as a company say, and it's true. And then I'll talk about how I apply that specifically. So testing and learning simply means that we are willing to try a lot of different things, and we intentionally do that. We set up ideas not on a singular idea level, but on a sort of campaign or thematic level where we do it 10 different ways. And then we see which one outperformed. We ask ourselves why, and then we repeat that over and over and over again. And when we do that at scale, a lot of magical things begin to happen. You know, today BuzzFeed publishes north of 500 pieces of individual content per day globally. That's a huge volume of content, but we are really, there's a lot of people that work at BuzzFeed that help connect all of the learnings generated on the back of that to everyone else at BuzzFeed. So when you have something that goes off for whatever reason in a certain, by a certain writer in a certain market somewhere in the world, by within 24 hours, every other BuzzFeed writer will know about this, and they will all be trying to replicate that success with something else. And so that's how the engine works, and it's a good system because social media is unpredictable. And if there's anything that I've learned, it's that anyone who says they have all of the answers is probably full of it. It's complicated, it's always changing, and so this is a really smart strategy to make sure you're always on the right side of that change. Now, how this applies to me personally and my process recently is that I do things like read every single comment on any of the work I've ever made. When I was a sort of copywriter for BuzzFeed, I was writing a many branded posts for BuzzFeed, maybe as many as 3, 5, even 8 a week. And I would read the reactions that that they had on every channel they were on. And a lot of times the best ideas would come from someone who simply told you the idea. They would read something you did and say, you know, this would be a lot better if you just did X and Y. And that might be comment 300 out of 2,000. And if you didn't read all the others, you would have missed it. But when you read it, you go, God, they're right. And then you would just apply that the next day, right? And so that is often how it works for me. And then the other thing is you look at trends. Now that something that's getting really interesting is moving on from sort of the thematic trends, you can say, you know, oh, gaming is going to be big this year. There's a lot of new gaming stuff going on, and you can find all sorts of marketing research that would suggest this. So then you say, well, how do we make a good gaming show? And then you do what probably anyone can do, and you survey the marketplace, and you look for white space, and you say, this is what we can do. But then what BuzzFeed is now getting good at, as video is becoming, you know, the pivot to video, has we've pivoted, we're there, and now that we're really bringing an enterprise-level rigorous data approach to video, we're looking at watch time really carefully. Where are viewers dropping off and why? What are the elements of a show that keeps people watching until the very end? And so then this becomes tactics in a video where when we think of a concept, we go, well, that will never work because there isn't these XYZ factors that we know will improve the watch time, and those need to be there. So we need to come up with a way to do that. And BuzzFeed develops, you know, their own parlance for how to do this. And to give you one really simple example, a tasty video. We've all seen them, top-down recipe videos, and they're extremely watchable. And our watch time figures prove this, you know, still like some of the most watchable stuff BuzzFeed makes. And it's crazy because you think, God, why do people never get tired of this? They've seen dozens of them. But the answer is simply that you need to see someone complete a recipe once they begin a recipe. There's something about when we start the video with a teaser about what the end of the recipe looks like, and you begin watching that process and you begin to see the raw food being cut, you just have to get there. And it doesn't, and you're just willing to invest, you know, you're like, it's only a minute, like, okay, one more step. And so this is a simple withholding strategy. You're withholding something the viewer wants to see. And so that is just one of many like rules that we can apply to all of the video we create. And in making something that's, you know, going to be creatively interesting to people, but also on the data side, successful.
Well, that's I've always admired BuzzFeed in regards to how it thinks about data. In many ways, you know, I know you describe yourselves in all sorts of different ways, but you know, one of the first social media or social first publishers. But in many ways, you were one of the first like data-driven publishers, and using data in the feedback loop and you know, the test and learn sort of approach has obviously you know served you very well. But one of the other things that I've always admired about BuzzFeed is the sort of the unwillingness to chase vanity metrics and to obsess around metrics that ultimately might satisfy actually like a brand client, you know, because they don't know any better. But at the end of the day, it's just not you know ultimately that meaningful. And for a time, you know, the most important metric was like shares, right? Because you're engineering content to be shared, and people don't share anything unless it's ultimately going to provide them something, you know, with regards to their own individual social status or how someone else might perceive that piece of content, etc. But now, obviously, as you pivoted to video, it sounds like there's a big focus on watch time. So can you talk a little bit more about that? You know, at a high level, sort of BuzzFeed's current sort of attitudes towards metrics, and talk specifically about the metrics that you think matter.
Yeah, sure. So I think that a great example of a metric that the industry uses that doesn't make a lot of sense is the 3-second view. And I think probably, you know, the best thing Facebook's ever done for Facebook is to convince the world that a 3-second block of video counts as a view. I think that's on the face a ridiculous thing to suggest, but everyone uses that now, and it's the benchmark in the industry because, of course, you haven't really viewed anything if you've seen only 3 seconds of it. But and you know, that's a metric we use, and it's not like it's completely disconnected from other forms of success. If you have something that has a whole lot of 3-second views, it probably has a whole lot of 10-second views and 30-second views and completion rates, you know. So it's all related. But watch time is definitely the metric that we're thinking about moving forward in a video-focused world of social media. And that's simply because it appears that the platforms are prioritizing time spent. And so that's another way to put it. So if you think about what watch time is, it's really just time spent engaged on that platform. So if they're trying to encourage more people to be using Facebook or more people to be using Instagram or YouTube or what have you, and more time spent on the platform, they're going to look at watch time as a means to do that. So we are following suit and trying to drive up watch times to have people spend more time with our content.
I want to sort of switch gears and talk a little bit about the future and next year in particular. So we're just sort of, it's currently the last day of October. That's right. We're in London. It's Social Media Week.
It's also Halloween. The spookiest
It's also
day
Halloween.
Of the year.
It's also non-Brexit day, which is what I like to call it. But as we sort of, you know, draw our 2019 program to a close, we've been thinking a lot about our theme for 2020, which we announced a few weeks ago, which is Human X. The future of media and marketing will be human first and experience driven. And it unpacks in a few different ways. And empathy economics just happens to be sort of one of the tenets of that theme. But another tenet is looking closely at what we're calling the kind of the attention revolution, which is sort of underpinned by the attention crisis, right? Which is to say that we have spent, you know, an extraordinary amount of time as an industry kind of obsessing about the wrong metrics, chasing vanity metrics. But also, and I think most importantly, we have lost sight, I think, of one of the most fundamentally important things in regards to marketing and storytelling, which is to have a deep and profound respect for people's time and attention. It's a precious commodity, and people are feeling overwhelmed. And obviously, it's a highly competitive environment in regards to how do you capture time? How do you create content that like engages people? To maximize the watch time on a particular, you know, piece of content. And I think as we look to the future, reestablishing that respect for people's time and attention should be like a very big priority for us as an industry and you know at the individual kind of organization level as well. So when you hear that, and when you think about your work and what you're doing, what are some of the ways that you think we should be reestablishing that respect for people's time and attention when it comes to storytelling, when it comes to content?
Yeah, that's a fascinating way to look at the world. I mean, I think that there's an old term that we still use a lot today, clickbait, right? And clickbait is simply when you sort of trick someone into thinking something's going to be interesting and they click and they find out it is in fact not. So that would be the perfect example of what not to do. Now in the world of video, you're seeing a similar thing happening, and we don't have a word for this yet. I guess it's still clickbait, but my favorite example is like YouTubers, influencers who have a video titled like, "Oh my God, I almost died in a car crash," and then the video starts and they go, "Hey guys," and you just realize this is just a gambit, you know, to get me to watch 12 minutes so they can serve me 2 ads.
Watch bait.
Right, watch bait. And so I think that you know, it's just about being earnest with giving people really quality stuff and not stooping that low, because anyone can stoop that low. But if you do it, and maybe you can get away with it for a little bit, but the longer you do it, the more you'll be branded as someone who's guilty of this, and users will notice, and eventually I think you'll lose their trust. And so, you know, it's it's about delivering this quality product. But then if you go a step further, you know, if this is a smart strategy, I would think many would agree that they should be doing this. And if everyone is going to start doing it, then you almost have this war for attention, you know, the war for quality attention. So then it's, if everyone's focused on earning that quality attention, what is it that you're doing that people will really prioritize? And what does your message stand for? And how are you connecting back with the audience? How are you developing and maintaining that two-way relationship you have with them, rewarding them in some way? And, you know, a classic marketing tactic for this would be some sort of, you know, contest or whatever, where everyone who pays attention and subscribes gets the opportunity to win something. I think we're going to see really new and innovative ways of doing that that are much more, I guess, they have more substance to them, and it's not just a sort of baiting tactic to get to collect emails, but is in fact a legitimate desire to change someone's life or help someone's life, and that comes through in the media that you're creating. And if those two things combine into a single concept, now you're really talking.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And when you use the word sort of substance, I think it's really important. You know, we also talk about it in terms of like the equitable value exchange, right? You if you're going to invest time and your attention, then you have to be getting something in return for that that is equitable, that's equal to that time and attention. And unfortunately, as users of a lot of these different tools and platforms, I think we've either, first of all, we have no idea how to value our own time and attention, or it has been very much devalued by a lot of the platform companies because everybody has been obviously vying for our attention and doing whatever they possibly can to get it, right? So the shift has got to be towards, okay, what is the value exchange? Is it equitable? And if you are a content creator or a storyteller, a marketer, a brand, a publisher, and even if you're on the sort of tweaking the algorithm side of the business, that's, I think, where you have to come back to. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that sums it up nicely, this idea of this equity interchange, is a heady way to talk about basically making a video that people are going to want to watch to the end. And when they do end it, they'll feel fulfilled and they'll feel happy that they watched it. And maybe they'll watch the next episode.
Right, exactly. And I think that's it. You break it down, like, you know, happy that they watched it. That's great. You know, maybe that is just like one way of looking at it. You know, to what extent did this bring someone joy? But also, like, you know, was there some utility in it? Like, I think what I love about Tasty and Tasty's content is that it's super entertaining and it's very joyful. But it's also, there's a utility to kind of like the idea of learning how to do something. Or watching a piece of content that inspires you to take some kind of action. Like, these are the things that we need to be sort of talking about in terms of like how we measure the efficacy of something or measure the impact of something.
Absolutely. I would just add to that I think that there's a bright future for brands that are able to harness that audience attention, that earn that equity exchange, and then actually translate it from just a entertainment audience play where you're producing content, but actually to making something in real life that they want to buy and use. You know, Tasty has an app that has many millions of viewers, and if you've used the app, you'll know it does make cooking really easy. You know, it's not, and so that's a great product that people like, and then from that, Tasty is able to now co-brand products and bring those to market because we know what people might want to be shopping for. And so all of this is brand building, ultimately giving people stuff that they can purchase or they can use for free that is going to improve their life. And it all started with a video that was interesting to watch. And so that equity exchange is carried through the whole cycle. And I think that's sort of maybe the future for brands and a real opportunity they have to turn that audience into something else, something bigger.
So, James, you're actually going to be speaking at Social Media Week in London today, and by the time this comes out, it will have already happened, but it's okay because our listeners can watch your talk via smwinsider.com, which is our live streaming and on-demand platform. But I would love for you to share a little bit about what you're going to be talking about. So I think you're going to be sort of focusing on this idea of audience first. Can you talk about that and maybe share a few more kind of teasers as to some of the things you're going to be sharing today?
Absolutely. So great segue from what I was just saying. So the talk is called It's 2019 and Your Brand Needs to Think Like a Media Company. And the point is just to pass along some of the things that we're seeing at BuzzFeed that are quote-unquote media company things that I think that more brands should think of as something that's on their radar. So that would be actually a lot of the things we're speaking about today. I think that to boil my talk down to a few simple points, it's that brands, I think, for too long have approach their social media with the same mindset they approach their advertising or their marketing. And they're many years now rehearsed at doing this, and so they've gotten a lot better than it used to be, you know, 10 years ago. But sometimes it feels like they're still giving lip service to something like audience first mentality, which is a phrase that I think the industry is familiar with, and any you know, brand manager is going to know about that, and they're going to say, we are doing that. But then when you look at what they're actually doing, there's maybe some critical missteps that are missing. And what I ultimately hope people take away from my talk is that you should look at your customers on social media as audience members on social media. And this is the big think like a media company flip. It's, you know, stop thinking about ways to sell products to these people, sell them products in other spaces. In this space, they want to be entertained. We were talking about attention earlier, and you know, there's a sort of a war for attention going on. You know, what is at the top of your Instagram feed? That is, and so, you know, brands get to play in that world just like everybody else, because they can make an account and they can generate followers and they have the resources to produce really good content if they want to. And so when you think about things that way, and you think that you could perhaps create a huge community of food lovers, what do you then do with that audience you've created, and how can you connect that to other parts of your business?
Phenomenal. Can't wait for the session. James, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
It's been great. And some bagpipes in the background as well.
Exactly. It really has like added to the sort of the atmosphere and the ambiance of this conversation. So yeah, it's great. Cheers.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. Leads to Scale is edited and produced by Al Manarino. For the latest news and insights, or to learn more information about how to get involved with future Social Media Week events, please visit socialmediaweek.org.